Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio on the Dog Works Radio Network. You can find all of our episodes over on Apple Podcasts. Just search for Dog Works Radio, as well as all over social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, just about everything. So we're looking forward to hearing from you there. Today we're talking to an author and musher. His name is Richard Meldrum. He's calling in from Ontario, Canada today. Richard, how's it going?
Very good, Robert. Thank you for having me on the show today.
Thank you very much for joining us. If you would, Richard, give us a quick a little bit of bio about yourself. Tell us who you are and what you're all about.
Okay, so I moved to Canada in 2010. I was born in Scotland, and I lived in the UK for my entire life until 2010, when my wife and I made the decision to move to Canada. It was partly because of my profession, but it was also partly because we wanted to experience the world of mushing. In the UK, the snow is pretty bare in most places, so you can't really sled very easily. So we wanted to move to a place where you could sled. So we made the decision in about 2009 to move to Canada to start to try to sled. We've been here for nearly 7 years now, and I've been competitively mushing for about 3 years now. I've just finished my third season. We're only hobby mushers. I mean, we just do it part-time, we just do it for fun and love of the sport. But, you know, it's great fun to do, and we really enjoy having that. We brought 8 dogs over with us from the United Kingdom back in 2010. Since then, we've increased our number in our kennel up to 18. We're currently running 18 dogs. We're a registered kennel. We're called Wolfstar, and we just enjoy the mushing lifestyle, basically.
Well, you know, what caught my eye, Richard, is not only being a musher but also an author, but on part of that, you write scary-type stories or horror-type stories, and we are huge scary movie fans here at our place. Every October, we watch 31 Days of Horror, what we call it, a different classic movie every night. So that really caught my eye, and I want to jump into that. But first, let's talk a little bit about mushing, since this is Mushing Radio. You had mentioned coming over from Scotland. I assume that you were doing dry land or kart racing, whatever you guys call it there. Is that right?
That's correct. We were doing dry land mushing. We had the bikes and the standard two-wheelers. We also had a three-wheeler rig, which we used to run our dogs. We weren't running competitively. We were just running recreationally, just really for the fun of it, for the joy of having the dogs. As I said, the snow just isn't really there in the UK, and it's certainly not as predictable as it is in Ontario. So we did have really just dry landing. We didn't have a sled. We never really took to the snow at all. So we just did the dry landing, which was fun. You know,
right.
We enjoyed it. It was good for us. But you know, we just wanted a little bit more. So that's, as I said, the opportunity to move to Canada really sparked our interest. You know, we could go sledding. We could get the snow. We can enjoy the winters.
Right. So are you primarily a sprint musher then? And if so, you had mentioned that you have 18 dogs now. Are you running in the 4-dog class, 6-dog, 8-dog, open? Which one?
We typically run in the purebred 4-team. This year I started with the 6-team. We did the male run. The male run, as it says in my biography, is an invitation-only event. It runs a couple of hours north of here. It's a 22-kilometer run where you actually take the post and deliver it from one town to another. It's a great event for the public. And that was the first time this year that I ran the 6-team. So I'm moving towards the 6-team. But I'm still very keen on the 4-team, but I only run sprint. Typically, we run events like Halliburton, the Pinestone Resort race, which is a 4-team, 4-mile race. So sprint's really where I belong. But I'm trying to increase my mileage slightly up to probably up to about 20 kilometers in terms of the 6-team runs.
So, Richard, if you will, in terms of geography, we have folks that are listening pretty much all over the world. Can you give us some landmarks? Where are you related to to Canada? Were you related to, you know, maybe things that other, not, I mean, Toronto, not Canada itself, obviously. Where are you related into folks that may people know about?
I'm about an hour and a half drive north of Toronto, directly north, and a little bit south of a smaller city called Barrie. So we're really in kind of just outside the Greater Toronto area. We're about half an hour's drive away from the GTA, the boundary that marks the GTA. We're on the southern side of places like Haliburton. We're on the southern side of places like Minden, and the lakes area. So we're kind of on the cusp between the city and the country to a certain extent. So we're well positioned for that sort of event, such as Haliburton and Minden and various things like that. There's a great community in the area of mushers and dog sledding people, because they seem to be, you know, people seem to be popping up all over the place. We've got people who are of the south of us, you know, towards Hamilton and Windsor. We've got people who are in Guelph. We've got people to the east of us. We've got people to the north of us. So in this area, there's quite a pretty substantial community of dog sledding people who are more than happy to drive, you know, for 3, 4, 5 hours. And I'm sure that's very familiar to most people who are into the world of dog sledding, to drive that sort of length of time just to get to an event, just to get together for a weekend, to have a quick, you know, run together, just a training run or a race, or just a meet up, you know, just to say hi to each other. So, yeah, even though we're just on the edge of Toronto, we are quite well positioned in terms of not only the community, but also the access to the areas where the dog sledding takes place.
So, Richard, tell us a little bit about your dogs. Are they from one particular line or two? Do you have a preference for, you know, for size, for speed? I know you talked about running in the purebred class. It's much different than running your speedier Eurohounds or even some Alaskan Huskies. Tell us a little bit about who you have there.
Okay, so we have a mixture now. We started off in the UK about 15 years ago with purebred Siberians. And when we came over to Canada from the UK, we brought 8 of them with us. And they were all purebreds, and they're all related to each other. We had a litter in the UK, so we brought them all with us. Since then, we have had another litter of purebred Siberians. We got 2 of our guys together, and we produced a litter of 6. But in the last couple of years, we have picked up a couple of Alaskan Huskies. We're starting to think about moving into the open side of things, because obviously Siberians are relatively slow compared to the open teams. So we're starting to think about being a little bit more competitive, and that's where we got the Alaskans coming into the team. And they're both still relatively young. One's 18 months, the other one's just over 2 years old, so we're sort of training them up. One of our Alaskans ran quite well last season, so she's really quite a tough little dog, and she's got the makings of a pretty good lead dog. But generally, we go for the Siberians because, you know, that's the dog we've always had, that's the dog we started with. My team is not the fastest, I'm quite happy to admit that, but I certainly enjoy running them, and the guys really enjoy running them as well. At the moment, my 4 team is my original lead dog, who's actually 12 years old now, and he's still running very strong. The other 3 members of my 4 team are actually sons, and those are the guys we had when we first came to Canada, so they're turning 6 this year. So they're a good team. They run very well together. They're very strong. And certainly my lead dog, who's 12, is remarkable. He's super conditioned, and he's such a smart dog. I'm not sure what I'm going to do when he retires, but that's another worry to think about.
Right. Well, you know, I'm partial to the Siberians myself. That's what I started back with in the early 90s or so, and we still have 3 of them down there in our kennel, but boy, they sure are a little slower compared to the Alaskans. I've never got a chance to have run the hound dogs or the hound crosses, but man, those dogs there, they just fly, don't they?
They absolutely do. It's incredible to see the difference between the open class and the purebred class, especially with the Alaskans. They're so fast. And now we own a couple of them. You can see the differences. They're smaller dogs, but they're certainly stronger, and they just seem to be just that little bit quicker than the Siberians. And I think that's why a lot of people prefer the Alaskans, because they are a little bit faster, they're a little bit more competitive, you're more likely to, you know, to get placed in the competition if you have the open teams. Some Siberian teams are very good, some Siberian teams that I know of are extremely strong and extremely fast. So there are exceptions to the kind of Siberians are slower rule, but generally from what I've seen, you know, in my limited experience over the last 3 years, Alaskan Huskies definitely usually are the fastest teams, especially in the races.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about your coming on over to Canada. Is it a permanent move? Are you over on some type of work visa or something like that? How does one move from Scotland to another country without all the logistics that are involved with that?
Yes. It took a lot of effort, believe me, especially with the dogs, the amount of paperwork and the amount of organizing, and all credit to my wife because she did 99% of all the organizing. You know, I just sat back and, you know, enjoyed the show to a certain extent. But yeah, we initially moved over because I got a job offer at university in Toronto. We were originally on a work permit for a few years, but after a few years here, we decided that we wanted to make the move permanent. We got permanent residence in 2015. So yeah, we're here for good now. I think I can't see us going back to the UK. We enjoy the lifestyle too much out here. We've got a nice little hobby farm of a couple of acres. We've got the dogs. We've got some rescue pigs. You know, and everything's going well for us at the moment. So I can't see us ever going back to the UK, to be honest.
Well, hey, welcome to North America then. I'm glad you're enjoying, you know, the time over here and all that we have to offer. Can you give us a little bit of compare and contrast? I know it's a big difference between, as you mentioned, a place with relatively little snow there in the UK and in Scotland compared to what you may be seeing now in Canada. And, of course, we have great years and terrible years in terms of snow. But what do you think? Was the move worth it to pack up the family and all the dogs and move over and jump on sleds?
Absolutely, 100%. The winters out here are, I mean, I'm sure not as bad as they are in Alaska, but certainly, you know, the winters here are pretty harsh compared to what we experienced in the UK. But that's what we move for. We move for the snow. We move for the weather. We move for the ability to be able to sled, you know, and just the idea that we can drive for an hour or an hour and a half, and we can go to a race event, or we can go to a meet up with friends and go sledding for an afternoon. That's something that just would never have occurred to me back in the UK. We just didn't have the predictable snowfall. We just didn't have that sort of low temperature. So I actually love the winters out here. Most Canadians curse the winters, but I absolutely look forward to them, and I can't wait for the snow to arrive sometimes so we can get out in the sleds and have a good time.
Of course. We're talking to Richard Meldrum today here on Mushing Radio. Not only is he an author, but also a dog musher. He has a kennel of 18 sled dogs there in Ontario, Canada. And now we are going to switch gears a little bit and talk about his stories. I know you're just recently publishing a couple of stories. It's in a collection, is that right?
That's correct. It's an anthology, which is being published by Smoking Pen Press, who's a publishing company based in Idaho, and two of my stories have been featured in this anthology, which is very flattering. It's a privilege to be included in this anthology.
So tell us about your writing style. You had mentioned you are a member of the Horror Writers Association. That's what caught my eye for sure. But what type of stuff do you write? Do you typically write short stories? Are you writing about particular topics in your stories? Tell us a little bit about it.
I am mainly a short story writer. I've got a couple of novels on the back burner somewhere and on my computer that I haven't really looked at for a few years. My main, I'm going to say skill, my main ability is short stories. I seem to have the kind of ability to write a short story very quickly and very well. Some people may disagree, of course, but that's what I think. But yeah, I tend to write ghost stories, supernatural stories, stories around that area, that genre. I don't necessarily classify myself as a horror writer because I tend not to use a lot of gore or, you know, violence in my stories. They tend to be more positive in a sense. And certainly the two stories in this anthology are what I like to think is of being as positive ghost stories, if that's a thing, in the sense that it's not about, you know, revenge or not about, you know, violence or anything like that. It's about a more positive approach to the afterlife, I guess. So yeah, I mean, my
right.
main
and those
genre is ghost stories.
Yeah, and those are some of the best stories there are those kind of, scary stories sitting by the fireplace on a winter's night. Can't have much better than that, especially if it's a book of short stories. I mean, you're not, you don't have to be engrossed in a novel. They can, they're a page turner relatively quickly. So that's right up my alley, my kind of story there. So do you have an overwhelming theme with your stories? You had mentioned that you want to have sort of a positive twist, but is there kind of a revolving character or anything like that that is involved?
No, there actually isn't. My stories, and I've had about 50 accepted or published in the last couple of years since I started on this kind of trying to get published route. There really isn't a theme. I don't think there's a theme in my stories. There certainly isn't recurring characters. It's just really whatever occurs to me and, whatever I feel like writing at the time. I do obviously have a love of dogs, so, dogs do feature prominently in some of my stories. Obviously, the two in this collection, the two stories have dogs as the main characters, effectively. I have written a variety of other stories featuring animals and various other things like that. Because I've been in Canada for 7 years now, I've absorbed some of the kind of Canadian legends. I've just had a story published about the Wendigo, which is obviously the shape-shifting creature of legend. And I take my inspiration from anywhere and everywhere. I can be sitting on the train going down to work and an idea just pops into my head and, I decide to kind of scribble a couple of notes down. But really, in terms of a general theme, the only theme that runs through my stories really at the moment is supernatural, ghosts. That said, there's no recurring themes, there's no recurring characters.
So, Richard, tell us about the newest publication there, the anthology book. I haven't had a chance to read it. I just jumped on your Facebook post and thought, well, this would be a cool guest to have. It's like I said, it's a couple of my things that I love to talk about. Tell us about those. What are those stories about without giving too much away? Of course, we want people to pick up the book and take a read.
Okay, so the anthology as an entirety is a mixture of different stories. There's romance stories, there's ghost stories, there's mysteries, there's some fantasy stories as well. What the publishers have done, have been really looking for any type of story that features a pet, whether it be a dog or a cat or some other sort of pet within them as a main character. So if you pick up the book, you'll see a wide variety of different stories. The publishers have designed this book in a sense to, and they call it Read on the Run, this notion that, as you said, you can just pick up the book when you feel like it. When you've got 5 minutes, you can read a story or two stories. It's not necessarily something you have to sit down and digest all at once. You can just pick them up while commuting, while on the train, while waiting for an appointment or something, just to have a quick look and read one of the stories. So there's a whole different variety of different stories in this particular anthology. My stories clearly are on the supernatural side of things, and they both, no surprise, feature a dog as a main character. They are slightly different in context, but they do both involve, and I don't think this is too much of a spoiler, they both involve ghost dogs. Just involved in a variety of different scenarios and situations. And as I said, both these stories, to my mind, are very positive in a sense. And to be honest, they're two of my favorite stories. And I'm still kind of amazed that I actually managed to write these stories because I didn't think I had that good an imagination.
Richard, I love hearing about the nuts and bolts of creative type ventures. We've had a lot of filmmakers on, a lot of authors, a lot of those type folks here on the show. Can you give us your insight a little bit on the first question is sort of the changing media market? Nowadays things are going away from your typical bookstore like a Barnes & Nobles or something like that, and lots of folks are reading books on iPads or Kindles and that sort of thing. And, of course, a lot of people these days, since we're always on the move, so many people are getting their stories from audiobooks these days. Podcasts like this one are now very popular. Audiobooks from, like, Audible and places like that are just – just rocking and rolling in today's world. How are you finding it as an author that, things are changing in terms of how stories are digested today compared to, decades ago?
That's a great question, and that's something that I've been thinking about over the last few weeks, months, and years since professionally publishing. When I started writing, I was in my 20s, which is a fairly long time ago. It was super hard to get published. You had to get an agent, you had to write letters, you had to send manuscripts off to people. And one of the reasons I actually stopped writing in my late 20s was because I was just getting so frustrated. I just either got no response or I got some odd responses back from publishing places or agents, sometimes demanding money up front, et cetera, et cetera. And that really put me off. And I actually stopped writing for probably between 10 and 15 years. And it wasn't until I actually came to Canada I resurrected my writing. And really, it was through discovering some files on a computer, thinking, gosh, I didn't realize I still had those stories. I'm going to revisit them and relook at them. And then I decided, actually, these are pretty good. I'm going to try and get them published. And because the market has changed, there's so many small presses out there. There's so many publishing houses who are doing things online. There's so many places where you can actually get books printed now. And, you know, the cost isn't significantly high. It's really easy. And what I found is there's so many places to get published out there that, you know, if you are a professional writer or even an amateur writer who's interested in getting your work published, then there's so many places, there's so many venues, there's so many websites, there's so many companies, so many online magazines. The market really has changed. It's far more accessible than it was when I first started writing, and I think that's a really great thing. There's so much talent out there, and there's so many people who are willing to put time and effort into editing these stories, collecting these stories together, putting them onto websites, you know, promoting them, you know, and social media is perfect for that. Facebook and Twitter and all these other avenues are perfect for promoting these authors, promoting these books, promoting these magazines. So I think it's an amazing time to be a writer at the moment because there's so many venues to put your work. Regarding people on the move, yeah, I mean, the publishing world has struggled to keep up, I think, to a certain extent, but I think it's doing okay now. I think with online and things like Kindle and ebooks, I think the publishing world is actually doing pretty good. They've had to change their marketing strategy. They can't really rely on bookstores anymore, and especially with the ebooks and the rise of companies like Amazon, you know, marketing and distribution has to be different these days. But I think the book publishing world is catching up, and I think it's doing pretty well. I think it's doing pretty well.
You know, I love a good book. There's still something about just sitting down and holding one in your hand, like I said, just kind of sitting there next to the fireplace and really kicking back and enjoying a good book versus carrying around an iPad or a Kindle or whatever all the time. So, Richard, do you have any processes that you go through every time you write? You often hear about that with authors who, you know, have to do it, you know, in a particular place at a particular time with a glass of wine and, you know, classical music playing or whatever, than other folks have to do all of their work at a Starbucks or something like that. Where do you get your best work done, or is it just sort of whenever you get a chance to sit down and take a few moments? And I say that because the musher chores never end, do they?
That's true. I have to fit my profession into my mushing, into my writing. My writing is typically done in the morning. I tend to be a morning writer, so I get up relatively early, and everybody who's got dogs will know why we have to get up early. And then I sit down with a cup of coffee, and I typically spend a couple of hours writing every day if I can. My work allows me to work from home, so I usually try and squeeze in an hour or so of writing before I start my real work. Funnily enough, I actually write in the kitchen. I don't write anywhere else. We have, you know, an office where I am actually now, but I don't write up here. I only ever write in the kitchen. So it's in the kitchen for a couple of hours in the morning. It's as simple as that. I can't write
right
anywhere else.
So you had mentioned that you've been published quite a bit since moving over here to North America. Are you finding that, and I guess this is a question because I'm not necessarily an author, is it easier to get published once you are published, you know, sort of that chicken before the egg type of thing? And if so, could you give a tip or trick or two for folks that are just getting started in this, you know, in this new realm of, you know, I've got stories, I want to publish them, and they don't know exactly what is the next step?
I think That's a really very good question. You've taxed me with that. Is it easier to get published once you've been published? I think it is, because you know the system, and sometimes you know the people. I've been published by around 7 publishers in the last couple of years, and at least 3 of those are people I keep going back to. So you develop a relationship with them. I think if you're an absolute beginner, a first-time author, it's hard to make that connection initially. So, for instance, when I submitted my very first story for publication, I submitted it to a UK publisher, Horrified Press, and the editor was actually very sympathetic, because she noticed that I actually changed a character name halfway through, because I decided to call him something else, but I hadn't made all the changes. And rather than rejecting me, she came back to me and said, you know, just a quick piece of advice, you need to proofread before you submit again, because you made this mistake. And she was very gentle with me, very nice with me, and she could have rejected me without any problem at all, and, you know, and that would have been enough of a reason to be rejected. So I think it's partially luck to a certain extent, you know, finding that editor, finding the publishing house who will be helpful and supportive to you in your first few attempts at getting published. So I think luck is a large part of it, but yeah. I guess once you have been published, as I said, you develop relationships with these magazines or online publishing places or you know, publishers who produce books. You develop that relationship, and it's almost a confidence issue. You get more confident about your work. When I first published, I thought, well, there's no way Emmy's going to want to publish this, because it's not very good. It's a bit of a weak story. And when I got accepted, that was a massive confidence boost and encouraged me to start publishing and submitting more and more and more. For somebody who's a first-time author, and I have people who've asked me this question before, my first piece of advice is write. Whatever comes into your mind, whatever you think, whatever idea you have, just write it. And then see what it turns out like. See what it looks like. If you're keen on getting it published, try and find somebody, I guess, like me, who can mentor you to a certain extent, who can edit it, who can check it for you. And again, a lot of these online publications, a lot of these magazines, a lot of these publishing houses, they're run by people who are authors as well. So they're very keen to give help and support. And if a new author can find somebody who's willing to mentor them, to give them support, to give them some advice, that's a huge step forward. You know, and that's something that I'm always willing to do, is I'm always willing to give people who are about to dip their toe in the water for the first time just some advice and help about the pitfalls that I fell into so that they can avoid them.
Right. Richard, we have just a couple of minutes left, but I have one more question before we get some info about how to buy your books. I think there's sort of a little bit of a misconception about the time that it takes to write a short story. And when you think about popular authors like Stephen King, for example, it seems like he's putting out a new book every other month. Something new is coming out by him, and he's just one writer that I read often. What is the time, and I know that may be difficult to answer, but what is the time that it takes from the minute you sit down with the story and start, you know, working out the process, to the time that it's potentially published? Is that weeks, months, years? How long does it take for something like that to become something where a person can read on a page?
For me, I can write a drabble, which is a 100-word short story, in about 5 minutes, if I have the story already complete in my mind. And sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't. However, I've also got stories sitting on my laptop that I've been nursing for a few months now, because I just either can't start or I can't finish, or there's some middle section missing. So the time it takes to write a story can vary really quite significantly, depending upon whether it is something it just flows. Isaac Asimov, I remember, once wrote that he just sat down and wrote a story from start to finish and never edited it afterwards, because it was exactly as he wanted it. Now, that never happens to me, but It can come very, very quickly and very, very easily sometimes. In terms of publication, because of the online nature of things, you know, sometimes if I'm publishing something on an online site like Trembling with Fear, for instance, then it can be published within a week of me writing it, because the turnaround time is fairly quick. In terms of a book publication, it can be months, it can be up to a year. I've had books that I've had acceptances for, and, you know, I'm waiting around for 8-10 months. And that's not because they're being slow, it's just because they're still collecting stories, or because they're going through the editing process, or going through the distribution and printing process. So it can take a while. I've still got stories which have been accepted which are still waiting for publication. And that's fine. That's just the nature of the business. The online world is very quick and very immediate, but if you're looking at paper copies or formatting for an ebook, then that can take a little bit longer. And it depends upon the resources the publishers have available, because often these people are doing it part-time. They're doing it, you know, while they're writing, while they're doing a full-time job as well. And they also, you know, maybe have families as well to look after. So they're kind of trying to squeeze it into the gaps in between the rest of their lives. So it's you know, it can vary quite significantly.
Excellent. Well, Richard, we're just about out of time here. I know the countdown was going there as you spoke. How do folks find out about you and your work? Where can folks get the most recent publication? You know, where are you located on social media? Just lay it out for us, please.
I'm on Facebook. I believe the link is in my biography on your website. So if people were to follow that link, that's where they get the most up-to-date information on my publications. I also have a website which I think I've linked to on Facebook as well. So really, Facebook's the best place to find me. So people want to, you know, see what books are available, where my publications are, even contact me for a piece of advice about writing. Facebook's the place to get me.
Excellent. Yes, and both of those links there are on your bio. As you're listening to the show, you can click on that both those links and connect with Richard. Any parting advice, Richard, either for mushing or for writing for folks that are listening?
For both mushing and writing, just go for it. Enjoy it. That's the most important part of it.
Excellent. Well, Richard, it was so nice to meet you here online and take the time to do our show today. I really appreciate it, and I think our listeners will as well, both the creative types and the mushers as well. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of time and energy to pack up a brood of dogs and move them all the way across, pretty much across the world there from one country to another. So I got to take my hat off for that. And let's keep in touch, and we'll continue to spread the word. How's that?
Perfect, Robert. Thank you so much. It was a privilege to be on the show today. I really appreciate it. It's great.
Thank you. On behalf of my guest today, Richard Meldrum, check out his website, check out his books, and we will see you guys next time. Goodbye.